Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday, the 28th of April. Very nice to have you with us. We missed you, and it's very nice to have you back. You can join us, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org, to join in on our conversation. We have many things to discuss. Let me introduce the group to you, and then we'll get to the subjects at hand. We begin with Dr. Alan Chartok, who is at the head of the roundtable. Good morning, sir.
And good morning to you, Joe. I don't know that I'm at the head of it, but I think I'm at the side of it.
Yeah, sort of off to the, yes. You're placed first. Like the big state dinner they're having tonight. $500,000. Did you read that? That's the price tag.
Is that the price tag when you bring in the...
Yeah. The State Department picks up the tab, by the way.
Oh, my God.
But it's, $500,000.
Well, all the same budget, isn't it?
Really? Yeah. There you go. It all comes out of the same
source.
Makes
you feel good on April 15th, doesn't it?
Right.
We
also have Rosemary Arameo with us, SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you with us. Thank you for coming in today. And we have the wonderful Mike Spain with us, who we missed last week. He was off welcoming a new grandchild. So congratulations
on
that.
Thanks very much.
Back. And very happy that you got to spend time and see all those special moments. So thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
We want to talk about a lot of things. Again, we welcome your comments. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. Obviously, we have to start with the story, the very sad story coming out of Baltimore and the violence in that city. Last night, I don't know. I have to say I was glued to the television and watching the coverage, and I was just getting angrier and angrier at both the coverage and what was happening, and I don't know.
What got you angry about the coverage, Joe?
What got me angry about the coverage was this insistence of having correspondents sort of in an area that's being looted, and then having the anchor tell them, "Oh, you're going to have to move away because you're going to get hurt," and the person saying, "Oh no," and then they're talking to people on the who are there actually doing the looting, and they're just screaming, and I don't know what it accomplishes. It seems to create more of a circus than already is there.
It was always also very prosecutorial. They kept asking the police why they gave the looters and the protesters space, like that somehow caused it, or why the curfew was announced for today rather than for immediately imposed. I thought it was very biased, actually.
What do you think about the actions of the mayor of Baltimore?
I think she's trying the best she can. She's kind of beloved. She is a daughter of that town. She's very measured. I think she's trying the best she can. Certainly this got out of hand, and she did not expect that. But did anybody? It's not like everybody is saying, "Oh, we knew this was going to happen."
Well, it seems like she's being crucified for misspeaking, trying to say that we're going to give people some space and saying it incorrectly and sounding like it was advocating people being violent, and it wasn't that, I'm sure.
And, I never took it as that at all.
But she's being, just brutally attacked for that.
I think it's the media doesn't know who to attribute this to, and they don't even want to say, "Oh, these looters are horrible. This is." They are, of course, saying violence is bad, because you have to say that, but there's a certain feeling that it's, boy, I even have to be careful how I say it, not justified, but there's a provocation for these for this violence, and everyone's trying to be careful about dancing around that, and the mayor is an easy target. She's an advocate for the city. She is the head of the police, the civilian head, and so I think she's taking a lot of heat. That's her job.
You know, when St. Louis happened, not that long ago, there was this thing where they let them go for a night. One night of looting, and we all saw it as they crashed into the... And then the next day, they put the lid on. Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm a middle-class mayor and catering to middle-class voters who, after all, win in elections, I got to tell you, I come down like a ton of bricks. let's assume for a second, you know, that this thing is exportable, that it begins to happen in other cities as it has.
As it has.
As it has in the past. And you're the mayor, let's say, of Albany, or a progressive mayor, which we have. Would you come down like a ton of bricks and say, this will not be tolerated here? If I'm her, I would. So so I don't know what the right thing to do is, but I think that the number one issue with most people is safety, is their personal safety.
You bring up a good point. I can't imagine that there's a mayor out there of any kind of mixed population city that isn't thinking about what's going to happen if there's an event to trigger protests in my town and how to handle it. And you're right. I think that it could be exportable, as you say.
So you've set up curfews now. Curfew will go into effect tonight from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. So the only, she said in her press conference last night, the only two reasons you're on the street is a medical emergency or you're going to work. And then, of course, the National Guard has been called in. There was some criticism I saw last night, even amongst anchors on the many news channels, about the curfew not being in place last night, which seemed at that point almost impossible to do, because as things are burning down, maybe that's like what you have to. I think the mayor made a great line, like, you know, you want me to have these press briefings every hour, but I also have to deal with the situation. There was a curfew for both
juveniles
and
that's in
and,
place all the time
yes,
in the city.
Mm-hmm. So that was being enforced, and
now I found myself being sympathetic to the mayor. I mean, she's obviously mourning this huge loss to the city. There's to its reputation, to the structures that it lost.
It's a setback.
A huge setback, and she's obviously mourning it. And yet, I think she's trying to be very measured. She certainly is not empathizing completely with her police department, which would also be an objectionable stand. I think she has a really tight and difficult line there to be walking.
But the other part of the middle class reaction to this is always, when you see some guy busting down a store window and going in and looting, as short term, I'm looting to do what? To protest? I'm looting, I'm grabbing a television or I'm grabbing something else. I think most people are furious about that, really, and appropriately furious.
Did you see the video of the mother who finds her son throwing rocks at the officers? He's dressed all in black. She's just wailing on him, yelling at him, you know, and she's become something of a internet
folk hero.
folk hero for disciplining. And that's the not kid, the way I raised you.
Right, exactly. And she was holding the kid accountable, and the police commissioner noted that, you know, and said he just wished more parents were reining in their kids the way that mother did.
And there were all kinds of clerics on the street last night talking to people to say, you know,
some were really articulate.
I'm sorry, Mike, what did you just say?
Some were really articulate in how they were describing what was going on. You could feel the sadness as they were watching this unfold.
And that duality of the understanding of why, not to the looting obviously, but to the protests, the understanding of why you would do that, and also just the concern for the violence and the damage that is being done.
Yeah, Atlantic Magazine came out with a just amazing look at that police department over the last since about 2011. And $6 million almost in damages have been paid out to people who have been really brutalized by the police. The most amazing one was an 87-year-old woman who calls the police to her house because her grandson has thrown himself on her porch with a gunshot wound. And they were insisting on going in the house. He had been shot on the street, he said. They said, no, it happened in the house. She said, don't go in, there's dogs in there. And they throw her against the wall, break her shoulder, 87. You know, and she was, it's incident after incident like that. And yes, it does tend to make you crazy.
Allison checked in and said, I would love to hear Rosemary, who has covered real police states in other countries, on the difference between violence and revolution. When the police can get away with the kind of brutality they're getting away with, I'm sick of the media taking their side. I agree with Alan, who criticizes the opportunistic looting. But a protest is a protest, Allison.
A protest is a constitutional right. It is a noble thing to disagree with your government and speak out with it. That's different than what's happening here.
Yeah, I think Allison sort of has it both ways here.
Yeah.
But a protest is a protest. It's not a protest when you're stealing television sets.
And in fact, I'm...
Well, and you're right, and you're setting a fire of a, you know, pharmacy and a liquor store. I mean, and then when the police department or when the fire department comes, you
cut the
hose. You cut the hose
and
you impede their progress.
That's almost a group hysteria. You know, it's something takes over where I have been scorned and therefore I have a right to what's in that store, or I have a right to express myself in a violent way. I mean, it's a sad psychology, but we've seen it before.
Sure, we have.
There's always going to be an element, and all you need is a couple, and you could have peaceful protests, and suddenly you're looking at a situation like Baltimore. That's the real risk.
Yeah, the illogic of burning down important buildings and places in your own neighborhood and throwing black businessmen at a
self-destruction.
Well, that's what the mayor and the governor last night said. You take years and years and years to build up these communities, and then it takes a night to tear them down.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm headed to the Middle East soon, and my son said, "Oh, the Middle East, good. I thought you were going to Baltimore." So that's how
it's
bad
being
it
perceived,
is.
Yeah. And there's a state of emergency. I mean, even if you want to go to Baltimore, it's difficult now, and obviously it should be. But it's a lot for the city and for all of the agencies to deal with this. Maybe we'll hold off on the break and we'll go out early. But I want to talk to you about the political side of this. A lot has been talked about the Obama administration and another issue. You know, another race issue that they ultimately have to deal with, and of the new attorney general, obviously, of how you address this and what's the right thing to do.
Well, if I'm him, I'm going to come out very strong and say, you can't do this. And if I'm the attorney general, I say, you cannot do this. You can protest peacefully, but you cannot do this because otherwise, I suspect, you'll see the Nixon administration, you know, coming back again. In other words, I think what happens is there is a reaction to this on the part of the middle class, who, as I have said so many times, are the voters and the people who make these decisions. They find this stuff abhorrent. If I'm the president of the United States, I know full well that this has to be dealt with right now. We've had a lot of letters on this. Here's one that really I don't from Tom. Who says, okay, looting is bad, crazy cops are too. So what, you have a choice?
Actually the federal people did have a choice. In 2012, the Baltimore Sun wrote a large, really detailed report on police brutality in the city. And the response of the federal government was, no, we're not going to come in and do an investigation similar to Ferguson. So, they have sat on the problem of police brutality. It is a little annoying that they would jump on this because property is involved.
Mm. But there's always this two wrongs make a right sort of argument, which I don't believe in.
It's not acceptable.
I don't believe in it. I just want you to know that. And
They could investigate both now. They could investigate what happened, the rioting in Baltimore as a result of terrible policing.
Don't you think it has a lot to do with what cities, so many cities are coming back, as we say, around here, and everyone has talked about the inner harbor of Baltimore and how great it is, and the great baseball stadium and how it's a great place to go now, but they have not put enough resource and effort into helping the poor sections of the city and helping the poor population and offering opportunities. I'm not saying that's easy, but it doesn't automatically spill over like I think we hope that it would. You know, even around here, you know, downtown Troy is so hot right now and all these new places opening. Schenectady, we've talked about it. And yet just blocks away are neighborhoods that are having enormous poverty. And I mean, have we let those programs just go asunder, you know, programs, the anti-poverty programs?
That's
that the problem?
That's
Is this the result of that?
Ryan says, I try to explain to my friends who are very critical of the situation what's happening. My circle of friends consists mainly of white middle-class folks. How can we possibly understand the rage of these people? They've seen what happens to people who try to protest peacefully, think MLK or the Occupy movement. We are leaving them with little recourse. Well, I don't buy that at all.
Well, it does. Yeah. Watching it last night, it did make me have new appreciation for what Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi achieved. To keep a movement like that from going violent is massive.
And Sean says, in North Charleston, there was an immediate charge and the officers' removal without pay. There were no days of riots.
Because there was a videotape that showed everything that happened. I mean, that's the trouble. We don't know exactly what happened a couple of weeks ago with this young man in Baltimore. We just know that he had a fatal injury when he was in police custody.
We are, is that it?
There are probably some more.
Oh, okay. Do you want to, we have 30 seconds. Do you want to read a letter or are you...
Says Steve, when nonviolence is preached by the representatives of the state while the state doles out heaps of violence to its citizens, it reveals itself to be a con. None of this can mean that rioting or violence is correct or wise any more than forest fire can be correct or wise. Wisdom isn't the point tonight. Disrespect is. In this case, disrespect for the hollow law and failed order is so regularly disrespects the rioters themselves. Well, I already told you what I think about that.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation on other issues, and we welcome your letters on this and other issues. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We will be back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel and to our coverage this morning. It is very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce the panel to you again. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We got a few more letters on Baltimore. We will read those, and then we will move on to other stories, including what is happening in Nepal.
Okay, so A. Skinner says, which gets more attention from the public? There have been ongoing protests all over the country and little attention, even in the face of repeated slaughter by the police. Now there's attention. Is it possible for us to decry violence, yet understand that people do feel other measures are ignored? Look up King's words about criticizing public violence in the face of government violence, especially Vietnam in this case. I would repeat, Rosemary has already said it, I don't think King was for this kind of violence. I think he made that very clear. Okay, so then Chad says, oh boy, Chad's a little long. I see it this way. Nobody, at least in America, has anyone as their figure of morality, no sense of community between different races and sections of cities. We used to have somebody like, as Rosemary just pointed out, Martin Luther King Jr., and now there's nobody to lead anyone. People need level-headed, just talented, motivational leaders who can sit in the middle so we don't kill each other every time we have a problem. Where are our leaders? Who does anyone have anymore? It's just a mob mentality out there. And then he says something's not so good, so I'm not reading it. And I read what you had. Don't go saying I could go on, but Alan wouldn't read it. I mean, that's a shot. It's not nice. So don't do it. That'll be it. And then Andrew says, I'm sorry, you may feel sympathy for Mayor Rawlings, but her response to the lawlessness was inept and she should be held accountable for the results. That's from Andrew. I guess, how many more do you see, Joe? I don't know. Okay, Jill says, I do not advocate the violence in any form from cops or citizens, but I think this is what the protest slogan, No Justice, No Peace, has come to mean. There's no justice, there will be no peace. I think some of the folks in the streets are saying, if we get no justice, you, meaning society, will see no peace. Anybody want to respond to that one? Well, it may be, but I'll tell you, I don't see it that way. I see it quite differently, which is if you do the looting, as a society, you will be held accountable. This is my bet, in a way that that will be repressive. And that is not what you want to get out of this. And Ethan says, Why did the mayor veto a bill to put body cameras on the police? Why was Gray arrested in the first place? He made eye contact with police and began to run. He was unable to walk before getting in the police vehicle. After being put in the vehicle, he was not seatbelted but allowed to be bumped and rolled around with serious injury. Why isn't the media focusing on the lack of information we've gotten on the investigation of the murder that was committed by these policemen? Why aren't they in jail? Where is the autopsy report? And there we are.
I think the media is all over this.
There just are no answers yet. It just takes longer than you want it to.
Well, I mean, isn't it appropriate for the media to ask these questions and bring them up?
Absolutely.
But there will be a media story that comes out of this, and you know what role the media and the coverage has had in.
The media will get blamed for everything. Mm-hmm.
The media got blamed last night at the mayor's press conference.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to other stories, and we, again, welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. So we'll, obviously yesterday we talked about Nepal, and the numbers just keep climbing, well over 4,000 now.
Near 5,000 they were reporting this morning.
Yes, so, and it is still very difficult to get around, to see what the extent of the damage is. Many Nepal villages cut off by the earthquake, and they certainly wait for aid as the death toll just continues to rise.
Yeah, drinking water is a problem, and there's some concern about people who are already camping out under terrible conditions then going without water, which is just, that's like an invitation to disease. That's a problem coming.
It's raining every night.
Yeah, it's raining. It's miserable. Aid is coming in from everywhere, apparently. India has really stepped up. The United States has sent lots of supplies. The airport is filled, they report.
And the only thing that we can do is donate money, really. I mean,
right.
There's nothing anybody here physically in the U.S. can send there other than aid agencies sending people with ship or planes full of supplies, and that costs money. So,
unless you're a doctor.
Oh, right. But I mean, if you have, this isn't, as we've learned from other disasters, what they need now is exactly what you said. They need tents, they need tarps, they need blankets, they need water.
Our Ian Pickus, our news director, is, as we speak, attempting to figure out where the best place that we can advise people to send money to is. I mean, we've had problems with this before. And, we want to figure this out, and then we want to go forward.
I'm going to perhaps have an answer I'll give to Ian. A friend is there, freelance writer, former New York Times reporter, lives in Kathmandu, has been struggling with this. So she has some suggestions. She says that people are asking her. I'll talk to Ian.
You don't want to give it to a major organization and then find out that the money didn't go to where it was supposed to go to.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's very common, isn't it?
Yes.
Seems like agencies cannot handle huge influxes of money.
We were talking about people looting during the violence. I mean, there are always an element of people that will exploit a terrible situation for personal gain. But we could use some guidance on that.
Sure.
That would be a valuable public service to identify, Red Cross and other legitimate organizations that are going to pump every penny that you donate to this effort.
I do want to talk about, and maybe this is for Rosemary, but residents have complained that the help is not reaching them or is arriving too slowly, and many accuse the government of incompetence, neglect, or even corruption.
Well, there's no question that the government is totally outclassed by what nature has thrown their way. This is, again, from Donna Tello-Lorch, and she goes, people are asking me for the names of the best places to donate. I know the Nepali staff at the World Bank are raising money that will be matched dollar for dollar by the World Bank. All the big international NGOs are here. Critical at this point are shelter, food, water, and fuel. Nerves are raw, fear levels are high, and it is far from over. Please keep Nepal on your thoughts and prayers.
It's interesting. Just from a technical point of view, a legal point of view, WAMC, as a not-for-profit radio station, has to ask the FCC for permission to help raise money for anybody besides ourselves. It's a very tough thing to do. I'm sure they're going to give it to us as they have in the past, but that's what they do.
Yeah, I've donated money to places in Bosnia, and you can't take a tax break on that. It's only if you give to American-based operations that then do work overseas. That
Interesting.
Seems, yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to another topic and find out what else is making news here. Of course, the Supreme Court of the United States will hear the same-sex marriage case today. When a federal judge declared same-sex marriage legal in Florida last year, it should have changed the way Bruce Stone does his job. The estate planning lawyer had for years helped gay couples patch together legal documents to try to approximate some of the protections enjoyed by heterosexual spouses. But with the Supreme Court set to decide later this year whether that court decision and others ought to stand, Stone is not taking any chances. He's still writing up power of attorney forms and setting up trusts out of state. I think this is interesting because there's what the court is dealing with this, and then there's the ground level of how you deal with the interim. To try to deal with what's going on until there is actually a ruling from the Supreme Court. But there will be the arguments will be heard today and the Supreme Court, and obviously a decision will come out later this year.
How'd you like to be a fly on the wall during that
conference?
Oh,
I would love that.
You know,
there'll be a book written, won't there?
How'd you like to be trying to figure out the politics of the situation, the reputation of the court as to whether or not it's a reactionary group which is holding on for dear life to say no to social change, and or whether, as John Roberts did, Chief Judge Roberts did with the health care, Obamacare, yeah. Saying, you know, I have to go over to the other side for this one because otherwise the court, I think he didn't say this, but otherwise the court will be in real trouble.
Well, the court really needs to establish a major civil rights case like this with better than a 5-4 decision. And that's what a lot of people are expecting, why a lot of people are anticipating or perhaps hoping that Justice Roberts will join the majority and it will be a more 6-3 kind of ruling. I mean, there's three justices
who aren't going to move.
Just aren't going to move.
And of course, you're assuming Kennedy goes with.
And that's an assumption that Justice Anthony Kennedy will continue to support the concept of this being a civil right, which he has indicated from other rulings that he's made. Roberts delayed action by the Supreme Court maybe a year ago, and some people speculate that he was doing just as you say, Alan. He was letting politics sort of, you know, congeal, and more states. I mean, 70% of the population of the United States live where marriage equality exists, you know, where same-sex marriage can happen legally. So this will just affirm that in all the land if the Supreme Court in June, when they're expected to make this ruling, does that. And if it's only 5-4, it feels like that's not really what we wanted. It was just because of some, you know, swing vote. But if Roberts joins Justice Kennedy and it's 6-3, that'll be an affirmation. And it will be a big big win, a bigger win than just simply a simple majority.
Well, you know, I'm always fascinated by this stuff. And you really put your finger right on it, Mike. I don't know what the sense of obligation is on the part of a Roberts, a chief judge who was appointed at a very young age and will be there forever, will be. Do you owe allegiance? Do you really read the Constitution and say, I think I can be persuaded by this line or that line, or and your clerk's talking to you? Or do you really think, hey, you know, I know who put me here, and I have an obligation to that conservative bloc, and I've got to do that. Now, I think it's the second. I think they're always worrying about that.
They have a job for life.
Yeah, they
have. you don't have to worry about that.
The conservative bloc can be as angry as they like. They're untouchable.
Well, there's another way to parse this. I think, which is that these folks have a sense of honor. In other words, I got put here for a reason. I got put here by somebody. Now, in the old days, there was a certain amount of people going forth and expressing themselves differently than the assumption. Eisenhower was very unhappy with, or articulated an unhappiness with Chief Judge Warren, saying, you know, saying the worst mistake I ever made, you know, that kind of thing. So, but in this case, I don't think that's the way it's been working out.
Well, it's just the same old, you know, responsibility of a public servant. If you go to Washington as a congressman, even, are you supposed to strictly represent the views of the majority of your district? Or are you supposed to do what you regard as the right thing and vote your conscience?
Yeah. Who is that? Edmund Burke, in his famous address to the electors of Bristol, England, where he said, you know, I'm a leader and I'm going to do this. And if you don't like it, you just can kick me out. Which is exactly what they did.
Right.
And then Justice Ginsburg has said she's already made up her mind.
I'm surprised.
Yeah.
I love her.
Ah, she's great.
I wish her good health.
Right.
She may have been drunk. Long life.
No, she's unbelievable.
She may have been drunk at the time. But she
No, she's unbelievable.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back and talk about other issues, and we'll read letters and all kinds of good stuff. It'll be a very exciting 13 minutes of the program. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Jenkintown Motors, New Paltz, offering foreign and domestic auto repair by Scott Cullen and a team of technicians specializing in Japanese models. JenkintownMotors.com. Forum Pharmaceuticals evaluating the safety and effectiveness of investigational medicine for Alzheimer's disease, 518-264-1130. And Spectrum 8 Theaters, Albany, New York, showing Hollywood, American independent, and foreign films, and presenting London's National Theater Series in HD and digital sound. Open daily, spectrum8.com.
Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And it's another day and another state legislator is pleading guilty.
Terrible that's a joke.
You're referring to a story by Brendan Lyons just posted on timesunion.com that William Scarborough, a state assemblyman from Queens, is now expected to plead guilty to a felony to settle charges accusing him of submitting $40,000 worth of fraudulent travel vouchers during a four-year period.
That's a lot.
He actually won't do the plea, but his attorney today, but it will come after his attorney files a notice, and this is apparently where it's going. He turned himself in last fall after a 11-count federal indictment that said that he essentially submitted 174 fraudulent travel vouchers between 2009 and 2012, and they used cell phone records and credit card records to show that he was somewhere elsewhere than Albany while he was claiming to be in Albany and collecting the daily per diem. And they say he got like $38,000 in personal gain from these fabrications. In one case back in 2011, he was at his daughter's graduation near
Emory University.
Right, Emory University. And he claimed he was in Albany, but his cell phone and his credit card records. And it just brings up the immense power that the government has to look at these records and catch people.
Well, now. But why hasn't it been happening up until now is the question. And the other question, Mike, is how many knees are knocking this morning?
Yes, because this kind of this investigation was not strictly Scarborough. Others have been investigated, according to sources Brendan Lyons has reported, and others could still face this kind of charge.
But compared to the kind of wrongdoing which we have seen in the past, this is relative small potatoes, but this is where you get them.
Well, yeah.
Does he pay back the $40,000?
He's expected to step down from his office, which he's held for 20 years, which, you know,
but
is not
I want the money. We got to pay for Joe Bruno's little court tab.
Yeah, all the details of the expected plea are not out yet. But anyways, that's what we're reporting today.
Well, that's usually what they isn't that usually part of the agreement?
Yeah, the actual plea will be in Binghamton, U.S. District Court in Binghamton, which includes the Northern District of New York, and it's actually going to happen on May 7th, according to the story today. But the announcement of it comes today.
I'm using this story when I work overseas with journalists who tell me that in America it's different and we don't have corruption. This is exactly what they're doing in Sarajevo right now, ripping off fees.
Let's move on to another story and talk about the Pope and what he is saying on climate change. This is from the New York Times. Since his first homily in 2013, Pope Francis has preached about the need to protect the earth and all of creation as part of a broad message on the environment. It has caused little controversy so far, but now, as he prepares to deliver what is likely to be a highly influential speech this summer on environmental degradation and the effects of human-caused climate change on the poor, he is alarming some conservatives in the United States who are loath to see the Catholic Church reposition itself as a mighty voice in a cause that they don't believe in.
As the only Jew in the room, I want to say that I think Pope Francis is the greatest pope that has ever lived.
As a straight Catholic, I want to say I for years talk about how the Pope squandered this enormous ability to do good by just saying, you know, use family planning. It would have saved poverty and women who suffered throughout much of the world. And all he had to do was say something. And now we have a pope who has the integrity and the guts to say, we have to do something about the earth. We're all in this together. I am so in favor of this. I really admire it.
This pope is planning what they call an encyclical, which is a papal letter to all of the bishops and cardinal and clergy in the Roman Catholic Church, and which is basically like, you know, here are your talking points.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right. And interestingly, to your point, Rosemary, the previous pope, Pope Benedict, was called the Green Pope.
Yeah,
he wrote very powerfully about the importance of protecting the environment, but he did not have the charisma and the position that Pope Francis has.
You know? Well, he was a scholar. He wrote, you know, difficult to understand, like, papers.
He wasn't the people's pope the way that
this guy's got marketing skills.
Yes, he does. It's interesting, though, that John Boehner, who happens to be a Catholic, and there's a lot of Catholic politicians and conservative politicians who happen to be Catholic, like Rick Santorum and Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush and Bobby Jindal and Chris Christie.
Wow, all of them.
They are, you know, this is going to put them in a spot. John Boehner invited the pope when he comes in September to the United States to speak before Congress. Father Thomas Rees, who's an analyst at National Catholic Reporter, he says, I think Boehner was out of his mind to invite the Pope to speak to Congress. I mean, he's going to come and it'll be a very interesting message.
I think it's a brilliant move on Boehner's part. I don't think people have the sense of politics of, the Pope stands for this and Boehner's different. No, you invite the Pope, you invite Netanyahu, you get a lot of credit for doing it. And not a lot of people shake their finger other than the New York Times.
Well, the Koch brothers might.
That's an interesting analysis. And it is a way to bring climate change to the Congress when he does have a very divided body there.
Right. And who knows what he really, 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 Boehner thinks.
Yeah, thinks
about that. Well, and reflective of sort of how we're divided on it, right?
Right.
Not
like
us.
We're divided. I mean, some of
no,
us don't believe in
No, meaning us as a world culture.
Oh, a world culture, I say.
Well, the Koch brothers and other conservatives are already.
That's Koch.
Koch brothers, I mean, you know, who are giving $1 billion.
What is with their name, you know?
KOCH.
Yeah, those guys.
The brothers, the billionaire industrialists brothers. They're saying that the whole
guys.
Their folks are saying that the Pope is being misled by experts at the United Nations who have proven unworthy of his trust.
And
they're sort of saying the Pope's a nice man and he means well, but he's incorrect about this.
It's pretty interesting because the one person maybe who can match their money clout is the Pope, with just pure charisma.
you know?
Right.
And his stature.
Point.
Well, I think it's important for him to spend this capital wisely. If he does spend it too much, you know, he may lose credibility.
I mean, he's can't talk about the death penalty like next week. He's going to pick it.
He'll talk about death penalty. These guys who are about to get shot.
But I think he's managed his charismatic charismatic capital very well so far.
Sure. All right, we have 2 minutes. The Tony Awards were announced this morning.
Wahoo!
Anybody care?
I don't.
What should we care about? Which one should we care about?
Best
Tell
play:
us.
The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. Very, very powerful play. Disgraced, which won the Pulitzer Prize last year and is on Broadway this year.
These are the nominees?
These are the nominees for Best Play. Hand to God, which I have not seen, but it involves a puppet, so I want to see it.
You'll have to tell us about this, Joe, because you're the only one here.
Wolf Hall, Parts 1 and 2, which is about Henry VIII.
Hamilton's not up this year, right?
Hamilton is not up because it was off-Broadway and is moving to Broadway for next year's Tony's.
And Singing in the Rain we saw in previews, which was unbelievably good.
Really?
Yeah, unbelievably.
How were the rain sequences in Singing in
the Rain? Well, it's a whole different thing, Mike. It's a whole different thing. It's fabulous. It's just fabulous.
They did it well.
Oh, yeah, and it's a different story, to be honest with you. I mean, by the time they're done with it, it's not Gene Kelly singing with the umbrella. So it's really good. But Joe, am I wrong about that? It's I think they're not eligible either because they showed it into we saw it in previews very recently, and the New York Times wrote a sort of compromising, snotty review. Everybody else thought it was
when
great.
Was this?
What?
When was Singing in the Rain?
Is it where did you see it
no,
in New York?
Paris, not,
oh, oh, an American in Paris.
American Paris. Yeah.
American
I'm so
Paris.
Sorry. I'm so
there
sorry.
We go.
Yeah.
Never mind.
That other Gene Kelly movie made into a Broadway musical.
Never, okay. Never mind.
I was like, I don't know that they put Singing in the Rain a long time ago, and I was like, okay, no, an American in Paris is up for Best Musical.
Is it?
Fun Home is up for Best Musical. Something Rotten is up for Best Musical, and The Visit with Cheetah Rivera is up for Best Musical.
I'm rooting for that one.
Yeah,
but there's
she's
no question it's
amazing.
Going to be American in Paris that wins.
The Elephant Man, Skylight, This Is Our Youth, and You Can't Take It With You up for
you
Best Revival.
Like
did you hear that shot? Did you hear it?
Well, here's what I'm going to do to defuse this situation.
It was unbelievable.
We're out of time.
She's old and still dancing.
She's great.
She's great in that show, too.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. She's fantastic. And, you know, the great thing about that show is that she doesn't move a lot, but everybody moves around her, and it makes it seem like she's moving. It's great.
It's an optical illusion.
That's right. It's
kind of
really,
like a puppet.
Really cool. Well, they move her around in a trunk a lot.
Oh,
you can write to us, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Thank you very much for being with us. We'll be back with more show after this.